Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with a CBS World News Roundup. President Carter hits the unofficial campaign trail again today, this time heading for New Jersey, where he'll address an energy forum in New Brunswick and Democratic fundraisers in East Rutherford. Last night, Mr. Carter hosted a big dinner in Washington. Several hundred guests were all committed to the Carter-Mondale ticket in 1980. Jim McManus reports.
It was a free dinner, frankly organized to begin drawing the line among Democrats between the Carter and Kennedy bandwagons to come. The guest list was short on political weight, heavy with minor county and state officials, and peppered with recognizable faces from the White House, Capitol Hill, and a quarter century of Democratic causes. No one mentioned the name of Senator Edward Kennedy, but President Carter drew his best response of the evening when he poked fun at the Massachusetts senator's getting permission from his mother to run and a promise from his estranged wife, Joan, to live in the White House should another Kennedy become president.
In the next few weeks, I will make a statement of my own concerning 1980. Tonight, I won't say exactly what that statement will be, but I can say this for all those of you who are my friends, you will not be disappointed. I asked my mama. Rosen said she'd be willing to live in the White House for four more years.
The president told his audience he has never feared a political fight and that he looks forward to 1980 with anticipation and confidence. Jim McManus, CBS News, Washington.
Mrs. Carter spent 12 hours yesterday campaigning in New Hampshire, then went to Boston, where CBS News White House correspondent Lee Thornton reports that a newsman reminded her that she was in the heart of Kennedy territory. Replied Mrs. Carter, "My husband is president of Massachusetts, too." The First Lady returns to New Hampshire today, then goes on to Maine for another long day of campaigning. Senator Kennedy plans to announce formation of an exploratory presidential campaign committee on Monday, and he's expected to make his formal declaration of candidacy around Thanksgiving. Another Soviet defection is getting unusual attention today in Tokyo. We'll hear about it from Bruce Dunning.
After 4.5 years as a Soviet correspondent in Japan, Stanislav Levchenko suddenly appeared at the American embassy and asked for asylum in the United States. Before the day ended, he was on a plane bound for Los Angeles. U.S. embassy officials would only confirm that Levchenko had defected, but would give no details about his reason or about where he was ultimately going in the United States. The 38-year-old journalist reportedly refused to meet any Soviet officials after his defection, but did meet Japanese national police. Levchenko told the police he felt he had no future in Soviet society, but no other details of his reasons for defecting were released. He reportedly left his wife and one child in Tokyo. Levchenko was the fourth Soviet citizen in 6 months to defect to the United States through the American embassy here. It is generally believed that many Soviet journalists are actually members of important intelligence-gathering agencies, a factor that could make this defector unusually significant to the United States. An embassy official here said the case was being handled with unusual secrecy. Bruce Dunning, CBS News, Tokyo.
An accelerating move is underway to help the starving people of Cambodia. Peter Collins reports from the capital of neighboring Thailand.
Senior American officials here in Bangkok have described the first reaction from Phnom Penh to the proposal to send food into Cambodia by truck as encouraging and a hopeful sign. A Phnom Penh radio broadcast this morning said the Vietnamese-backed government was ready to study new access routes into Cambodia with two international relief organizations that have been designated to deliver desperately needed supplies of rice and medicine. The Phnom Penh statement came less than 24 hours after a visit to the Cambodian capital by three American senators. The group proposed that trucks carrying food begin rolling across the Thai border into Cambodia as soon as possible. At a news conference here last night, they said they had been told by the government in Phnom Penh that up to 2.25 million Cambodians are facing starvation. American officials here note that today's statement did not say no to the idea, it failed to impose any conditions, and it did not attack the United States. But with all of that said, Phnom Penh's answer is still short of yes. Peter Collins, CBS News, Bangkok.
President Carter has committed the United States to provide $69 million as this country's share of an international food and relief program for Cambodia. an effort the president calls it to avert a tragedy of genocidal proportions. Mr. Carter also urges Americans to make private contributions. American religious leaders are asking the United Nations to sponsor an immediate and massive airlift of food and medical supplies. This is an important day in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee's detailed examination of the SALT II Treaty. Neil Strausser tells us why.
The committee has been successful so far in turning back all so-called killer amendments that would force renegotiation of the treaty. But today it comes to what one committee source believes is the most critical point in the whole passage of the treaty through the committee. The committee will consider, starting behind closed doors, two understandings offered by Ohio Democrat John Glenn, both relating to verification of treaty compliance. Both, Glenn says, would require Russian acceptance. The first bars the encryption of some missile telemetry signals now allowed in the treaty. The second asks the Russians to notify us of missile tests within as well as outside the Soviet Union. Glenn, the former astronaut, feels the changes are necessary to close verification loopholes, and his reputation as a missile expert is considerable. Committee sources still are hoping for a compromise short of changing treaty terms, but there is a fear that Glenn's proposals, as worded, could prevail. Or if they don't, that Glenn's important support on the verification issue could be lost on the Senate floor. Neil Strausser, CBS News, the U.S. Senate.
For the first time since the draft ended in 1973, all of the armed services have failed to meet their annual recruiting goals. CBS News Pentagon correspondent Ike Pappas has details.
The preliminary figures are worse than anyone expected. The Army, 16,000 volunteers short. The Navy, more than 5,000 short. The Air Force, 1,400 short. The Marines, 1,200 short. The main reason, says the Pentagon, is economic. Unemployment has gone down, so fewer Americans are turning to the armed forces for jobs. The population of young people is also declining, as are positive attitudes about serving in the military. The United States wants to keep its troops in potential overseas combat areas up to full strength. So soldiers have been shifted out of units in the United States, leaving those units seriously shorthanded and prompting doubts about the United States' ability to defend itself if attacked. On Capitol Hill, Representative Sonny Montgomery has sent a letter to his colleagues saying that the latest recruiting figures show the all-volunteer force is failing and Congress should reconsider a bill to reinstate military registration or even a limited draft defeated by the House earlier this year. Ike Pappas, CBS News, Washington.
The House is expected to vote today on emergency legislation providing $1.35 billion to help poor people pay this winter's home heating bills. Speaker Thomas O'Neill says quick passage of an energy assistance program is a national imperative. This could be the final day of contract talks between Chrysler Corporation and the United Auto Workers. Don Webster has the story in Highland Park, Michigan.
Like the settlements earlier this year with General Motors and Ford, the UAW's negotiations with Chrysler will probably go right down to the wire. But this time, the circumstances are different. The union's negotiating deadline is 12 noon. But because of Chrysler's shaky financial situation, the union has also said it won't strike even if the deadline isn't met. So, to a degree, it's an artificial deadline. These are especially difficult negotiations because the union has agreed it will accept a settlement somewhat less favorable than those at GM and Ford. But how much less favorable is hotly debated even within the UAW. If a settlement isn't reached by noon, it could be something of a public relations black eye for Chrysler after the union went to bat in Washington in favor of government assistance. Don Webster, CBS News, Highland Park, Michigan.
A Turkish military court today sentenced four Palestinian guerrillas to death for an attack on the Egyptian embassy in Ankara last July. Three people lost their lives in the incident. Eight bombs went off in the Paris area this morning, causing heavy damage, but no injuries and no arrests have been made so far. Police say the bombs were set off by the outlawed Corsican National Liberation Front. Another bomb went off in Lyon. The Basques and the Catalans of northern Spain are voting in referendums on Madrid's plan to restore some of the home rule that was taken from them during the regime of Francisco Franco. Approval is anticipated in both referendums.